you know about the USA? Do you know about the government? Can you tell me about the Constitution?
A little music from Schoolhouse Rock to get us going today as we talk civics education to begin the show. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on WPR News. And Sam Shintaugh is with us in the studio. He's the creator and director of the Common Good Initiative. It's a program dedicated to civic education and strengthening bonds between citizens and government. Sam's also a lecturer at both UW-La Crosse and Viterbo University. And as we talk with Sam, we want to hear from you. Let us know your questions about civics, and that might include the Constitution, maybe how elections work, maybe the branches of government, and, of course, a whole lot more. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Sam Shintaugh, welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's wonderful to be here down in Madison. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Civics education includes a lot of things.
Absolutely. So, you know, when people think about civics education, the first thing they go to is, of course, the nuts and bolts, right? How our government operates, the three branches, what's in the Constitution. And obviously, all of that is important. That's the fundamentals. That's the building blocks that we've got to start with. But I always like to think that civics education is so much more than this. It is learning the building blocks and then actually practicing with the building blocks, actually deliberating with each other, having those conversations about our government, about how government operates, about maybe what we're seeing in current events and applying it to the building blocks. And so when we started this program, we called it Rebuilding American Civics. The idea was to provide those building blocks. Fundamentally, I took my Intro to American Government class that I've taught for years, broke it down and said, okay, we can offer this for free to adults in the community as well. So let's make sure people have a place to learn, to get education. But more importantly, let's have a place where people can come together and have those conversations across the political spectrum, where people can actually sit down face to face and converse about these very matters.
So the topics you include?
We always start at the top, the founding, the Constitution, what's in the Constitution. But then we get into things like breaking down civil liberties, breaking down civil rights, talking about interest groups and their role in the government, talking about the Congress, talking about the president. So, again, kind of tracking what would be in a typical Intro to American Government class for folks, but then giving people those nuts and bolts chapter by chapter. But as we go, we give ourselves enough space to actually be able to have conversations about those things along the way. So as an example, this year, what we decided to do in the class is we're doing a slow read of the Constitution, a document I think everyone thinks they're very familiar with. But, you know, think about when is the last time you actually sat down and read this thing and thought about what's in there? And so we just started right at the top. And every class, we just go as far as we can, working together, talking about the language, talking about what's in there, importantly, talking about what's not in there, and talking about how it might apply to our current times.
So is it a broad range of people who attend your classes?
It is. I would say it's mostly retired folks because we do them during the day at lunch hour. We've tried a bunch of – we've been doing this program now for about 6 years, and we've tried different times. We found our sweet spot at the noon hour. So I would say we mostly get retired folks, but we do some offshoot programs. So, for example, just last year we started a new program with the Rivoli Theater up in La Crosse called Civics and Cinema. And there we pick a famous movie that has some tie to civics issues. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, for example, was our first one. And there we bring the community in, we let people come in, we watch the movie together, and then we have a conversation. Well, with that, we're finding that we've got a very disparate age group. Just last week, we showed Dr. Strangelove as part of our Civics and Cinema. We had over 100 people there, and I would say easily half of the folks there were under 35, had never seen the movie before, were interested in talking about about some of the topics that were presented by the movie. So we are getting a great age demographic, and importantly, we're getting a wide political demographic. We're getting people across the spectrum who are simply interested in learning and having those conversations.
And this is not a course about politics per se.
No, you know, I always like to think that the politics and politicians, they're important in the moment, right? But all this stuff is ephemeral, or it's passing in our kind of bigger discourse on civics. What really matters in terms of understanding civics? Well, we have to understand the structure, the rules, the norms. And so we always start there, making sure that we have a common understanding of those things. And then we can apply what's happening in current events using our understanding of those structural pieces there. But no, we try, I mean, obviously...
Politicians come and go.
Politicians come and go. The Constitution stays the same. And I think it's really important that we kind of keep that in mind. So are we going to talk about political things? Of course. But the beauty of this, too, is once you start understanding the structure, the conversations you have about politics tend to be much deeper, much less intensive, right? So people actually kind of take the temperature down because we're actually working from a collective body of understanding, which is quite nice. And you know, it's that old line. I always like to tell my college students, who I also, you know, teach this with the university students, to say, you know, you hear growing up, well, you don't talk about politics and religion in mixed company, right? But the problem is, in living in a democratic republic like we do, we have to talk about politics. The problem is we don't do it well. And so what we're trying to do is provide some context for people to have better, deeper conversations about what they're seeing out in that political world.
You get pretty good feedback?
We do, yeah. We get both great participation and great feedback in terms of what people are learning. I have several folks that are, you know, just I'll see them out in town and they'll say, oh, there's my professor. It's great to see my professor there. I'm learning all this stuff. But it's the feedback is also, you know, what do you want to learn about, or what are you interested in terms of the structure? What maybe do you feel there are misperceptions or misunderstandings about that we can really dig into? So it's been a great program. We started back during the pandemic, so many things did. We started online. We had a handful of people that started initially, and now we get anywhere from 50 to 80 people sometimes for some of our programs, just showing up regularly. And every session we do this, I'm just really happy to report, we get a few more people. So people are still finding it and coming out every time.
Sam Shinta, our guest, he is creator and director of the Common Good Initiative, a program dedicated to civic education. I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts as we move along today. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. You know, I'm thinking about the Constitution. One of my favorite things in the Constitution is the preamble. I love, you know, and I can't give it to you right now, but we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. Am I getting
Yep. You're there. Yep.
Provide for the common defense.
Yep.
Promote the general welfare.
Yep.
And secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves.
And
our posterity.
And right there, Larry, you hit the key language of this preamble. So for years, I mean, I love the preamble. It is beautiful. And there's so much, if you break that down, that's packed in there. For so long, I focused on the we the people part, because obviously there you get this whole idea of self-government, of this whole idea that this government comes from the people. It doesn't say we the politicians in Washington. No. It says we the people. But then we list all these wonderful things that are being protected, being created by this Constitution. But then when we get to that last part there, establish justice for ourselves and our posterity. And this whole idea of stewardship that is embedded in this, this notion that all of these gifts that our Constitution give us are for us, making sure that we are providing them also for our neighbors, but our posterity as well. Everybody that comes after us deserves the same government. And so our jobs as citizens, in part, is to make sure we're tending this well, that we are good stewards of government so that everybody who comes after us can enjoy it as well.
I learned that back at Madison East High School.
Well, it's you had it perfectly. That was you were great. You were right on target with that.
Although I think I would occasionally miss and say prosperity instead of prosperity.
Well, and it's funny, when I come to that posterity word, most people don't know what that means in this or think about what that means. And when people learn about this, think about it, all of a sudden it's, oh my gosh, that's, you're right. We are good stewards of this government. We have to make sure our children, our grandchildren also get to enjoy the gifts that have been given to us from prior generations.
Yeah. Rich in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Rich. Rich, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, good morning. It's been a long, long time since I had Mr. Wiebe's freshman American government class at Madison West High School. He taught something vitally important in that class, and that was the importance of the three branches of our government. But I want to hone in more specifically, if you don't mind, please, about the judicial branch. I have some real concerns about how partisan it's becoming. I'd like a little bit of a refresher and maybe some clarity around the whole idea or the concept of these three branches being somewhat independent and operating as checks and balances on one another. And I was just wondering if your guest would be willing to share something about his thoughts on the judicial branch becoming so partisan, please.
You bet. Well, Rich, thank you so much for the question. First of all, to your first part, one of the things I hear in terms of feedback from our students all the time is, hey, this is great. It's wonderful to actually be talking about civics for the first time since high school again. So it's always wonderful to engage with folks. So you're absolutely right about the checks and balances. If you read the Constitution, if you read the Federalist Papers, you understand that our government is in theory these co-equal branches that have some exclusive powers, some shared powers, and then some checking powers. This whole idea that they are there to kind of work together, but also to make sure that no one branch has too much power. And our judicial branch, as it kind of grew out of the Constitution and then through some important decisions, gets this checking power of making sure that whatever those other branches are doing conforms with the Constitution, conforms with the rule book. Now, the challenge is that when you look at the Constitution, one of the beauties is it is both very specific but also very vague in parts, which means that some folks are going to have different interpretations of what exactly some of the things that are listed in the Constitution actually mean, what the extent of those powers are, what the extent of authority is. And what I always like to point out to students is that, you know, if you look at the way that our Supreme Court has interpreted the Constitution, you've got justifications for what we might call more of an originalist interpretation, mm-hmm. where you look at the text, you look at the intention at the time, and you've got some justification for a living Constitution interpretation, that the thing grows over time, which means that by that very nature, you're going to have legitimate arguments from both sides, right, looking at how to interpret this thing. What you hope at any given time is that the court is doing this in a way that they're acting like judges, meaning they're being as impartial as possible in terms of the politics, while also understanding that they are going to have some ideological differences in terms of how that interpretation might go. And I think what often happens is people conflate those things, right? That they see that the court is maybe interpreting the Constitution one way that seems favorable to one political side, and so therefore the court is necessarily being political, when in fact it might simply be being ideological and ideologically consistent, which simply just is also an adaptation or reflection of the politics. So I like to think for the most part that our federal judges try to do a very good job of being judges, but understanding that they're going to come at this thing with some different opinions in terms of interpreting the Constitution. And I think that's fair and legitimate.
Now, Albert emailed us, would like to hear about the decline in civics from the 50s to present. And also, what was behind the, who or what was behind the decline?
Yeah, I can't speak to what, why the decline. When I speak with folks all the time, I hear that we taught civics more centrally. It was stronger back in the 50s and the 60s. We fell away from that. I'm sure, like so many societal issues, there it's a multi-causal thing that, you know, how much did testing play into this? How much did the way that we just do education generally play into this? The nice thing is Wisconsin is one of the states that actually has a civics requirement in its high school, in its high schools. So all students have to take an American government class. And the really nice news is that they are bolstering that civics requirement because, as I, you know, going back to where I started this conversation, civics is more than just knowing the ABCs of the Constitution and the three branches. It's also being able to engage with people in civic critical thinking centric conversations. And so a lot of the new civics requirements are pointing in that direction of trying to not just get the knowledge, but actually having people practice being citizens. So I agree completely with Albert that we've fallen off a little bit over the past several decades. We see this reflected in polls. We maybe see it reflected in behaviors in society in terms of how people have these tough conversations. But the good news is I think as a state, we are moving in the right direction with respect to our secondary education on civics education.
Another emailer here. These days, talking about politics can be so emotional. How can you have a productive conversation with someone who you may not agree with?
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things we do, right? And it goes back to that line about we try to avoid it because we think, well, in polite society, you shouldn't do it. But we have to do it. And so what I always like to think is, well, first of all, again, if we can start with the shared stuff. Okay, let's read the Constitution together. Let's understand our founding principles. Let's understand what it means to be Americans. Let's find those places where we agree. And then we can work out from there. And that tends to diffuse some of the emotion. Not all of the emotion, but some of the emotion. Then taking some very simple things into account here. I was just talking with a friend of mine this morning. When we think about sharing opinions, at the end of the day, whose opinion do you get to control? Your own, yeah. Right? Whose opinions do you get to control? Your own? Everyone else's opinions, right? You have a persuasive ability, perhaps. But part of this is sometimes listening to other people to try and appreciate where they're coming from. Again, going back to talking about the Supreme Court justices, there are a multitude of ways to interpret the Constitution. Just because you favor one doesn't mean it's right. It means it's right for you. It means that that's where you feel strongly. But we also benefit sometimes from listening to somebody else and hearing their truth. That can maybe reinforce and bolster our truth, or it can give us some new information that we didn't have before. So part of the conversational part is that active listening. Now, again, does that diffuse all of the emotion? Absolutely not. But I think some of these simple things that we could do might help to diffuse some of it, at least.
Yeah. Are there some common misperceptions about the Constitution, or is that kind of what you were just telling me?
So some things that folks are surprised by. So, for example, the First Amendment, and I see politicians even do this. The First Amendment speaks to government control of speech. And so I always have to remind people that, you know, if a social media platform deplatforms somebody, takes them off, that's not a violation of the First Amendment. It might be a violation of our free speech principles, right, that we want to believe in a society of free speech, but only the government can infringe on your free speech and it be a First Amendment violation. So that's an eye-opener for some folks. The other one, we're talking about these co-equal branches. Well, if you were, say an alien landed on the planet here, right, and they could somehow understand English and understand our structure of government, and they read the Constitution, they would be convinced that this was a legislative form of government, that the Congress should be the most powerful part of our government. If you read the Constitution, it's got the most explicit powers. It's got the longest list in terms of what it can actually do. And yet, today, if you ask most people, is Congress the most powerful part of our government? I don't think you'd find many people agreeing with that statement, right? So sometimes it helps you to read this stuff and to understand the context to get a better sense of how this thing might operate effectively.
Judy in Fitchburg emailed us, have you ever invited Senator Russ Feingold to be a guest at his class? He's a walking constitution and carries a copy in his pocket.
Yes, I carry one with me all the time as well. It's a great rule book to always have. We have not reached out to him for this class. I have met Senator Feingold in the past. I know he was the head of the Constitution Center, I think it was, for a while. If he's listening, we would love to have him out in La Crosse to come talk about it. We welcome a lot of different public figures when they're available to come and talk with our class about how they see some of this stuff as well.
And Justin in Madison emailed, is there any possible way that we could shift to a multi-party system like they have in many other places in the world? Perhaps that could solve some of the deep issues we have in this country with only two parties in power.
Yeah, this is one, Justin, that I hear a lot about, that people are frustrated with the two-party system. They wish that we could break out of it. And without getting too political science nerdy on this, there are some structural things that in our government that kind of disallow or maybe make that very, very difficult for a third party to gain traction. But just on the bigger picture, these two parties dominate our political conversation. I had a friend back in Denver who always likened it to, when I lived there a long time ago, likened it to the Pepsi versus Coke, right? That you pick Pepsi versus Coke. Well, what if I like root beer? Well, you get Pepsi versus Coke. Well, what if I want 7-Up? What if I want, well, it's available, but, you know, Pepsi versus Coke at the end of the day, because that's your choice. And so those two parties really dominate and take up so much of the oxygen in our political sphere that that's also very difficult. Now, never say never. I think that there has definitely been enhanced interest over the past several years in looking at third parties and trying to get more space for those. And I know here in the state, for example, they're looking at things like Final Five voting that could certainly enhance opportunities potentially for third parties.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, on that note, Sam, boy, the time flew.
Absolutely.
I hope you'll come back and be with us again. I'd love
to do it.
I'd love to talk with you some more because we have plenty more to cover. Sam, thank you.
Thank you so much, Larry. Have a great day.
Sam Shinta, our guest, creator and director of the Common Good Initiative. It's a program dedicated to civic education. He's also a lecturer at UW La Crosse and also at the Turbo University. It's great to have him with us, and we'll get him back and we'll do it again. We can all learn a little more about civics, for sure. Coming up, we're going to take a look at some legal issues relating to condos and HOAs. I'm Larry Mueller.
Hey, learn about the USA.